Yesterday, we were talking about spaciousness. As perhaps an aspect of our true nature. And also in the context of how these gatherings originated in the way that Coben presented them. We can't really talk about our true nature directly. And as Diamond Sutra says, it can't be spoken of, so we call it true nature. Something like that. So it becomes a convention. And within the context of this spacious quality, I find we're using our aggregate form and our senses, we use them, we aspire to experience this true nature through our form and consciousness. And another way of looking at it is that our true nature, Buddha nature, through this form is looking at itself. And through the windows of the senses, it experiences each other. I think sometimes that's what we recognize when we see ourselves. It's not the only interpretation, but I think of it as nirmanakaya, this manifested form, as the numerous nirmanakaya, as we say at lunch, the one of the Buddha bodies, the earth and the trees, sky. And with this, it's easy to relate to one another with those inspiring names like compassion, love, and gratitude, because it's none other than ourself that we're relating to. I think in the context of the aspect of our tradition that inspires ceremony comes also from this perspective of acknowledging this true nature, and so it's as we move into these ceremonial times, we do so with humility and gratitude. It's not an accomplishment, just a recognition of what is. So I, in the ordination time, you say, I take refuge in the Buddha, I take refuge in the Sangha, I take refuge in the Dharma, and I take refuge in the Sangha. These are those three Buddha bodies that we take refuge in. I always felt that taking refuge in the Buddha was such a glorious feeling, and also in the Dharma, and in the Sangha, maybe not so much. Very difficult to get along with everyone. Somebody always has an opinion, including myself. But this Sangha practice is perhaps the most important. It's kind of intimate. But where else could you talk about these things? And support each other in this ancient form and wisdom that's been passed down. So that's why we acknowledge ourselves for being here and recognizing being woken up to this original state of being.
When you refer to this original state of being, are you talking about this moment, this constant moment, or are you talking about something more esoteric or something more hidden?
What did I say? Constant state of being.
Original
state. Original state. Goes back to this something that can't really be spoken of. But we're all of that. We are that. And the only thing that really, I think this, I want to say, it's like, we have faith in what we've heard, you know, you run into this words of Buddha or words of Koban or something like that, and they say you can try this posture. And when you're on good faith, you attempt it. And when your faith is confirmed and you experience that way of being, there's no turning back. It cuts through all. In the moment of sitting properly, shall we say, it goes like this, but when you finally center in on Shikantaza, I think the true being emerges. Your cuts through delusion, cuts through your discursive mind. Something like that. It's hard to talk about.
If you say there's an original being, and I say, no, that's not original being, that's Atman, that's your permanent self with a small s.
Not what I'm talking about, though.
But what is the difference? If you show me original face or original being, and I say, no, that's permanent self.
Permanent self.
It's something I'm struggling with, because it seems as if the Buddhists came along and said, no Atman, everything is impermanent, and then the wheel turned and suddenly there was Buddha nature.
If you read The Awakening of Faith, written some time ago, basically says there is this infinite, eternal, undescribable thing, and we call it suchness, and that's all that can be said about it with words. I guess, you know, you could lean a little bit out of Buddhism and call it God or something. Maybe. I don't know how people define that, so I can't really say. But it's what we call emptiness. We call it suchness. We call it true nature, Buddha nature, your original self. But it's beyond the concept of this self. I don't know so much about Atman. But that's what you have to penetrate that for yourself in your own way, dissolve into that.
Is it a personal self or a universal? That same for.
It's we're of it, but to say that we're it is not correct. Because we too quickly start to fabricate what it is. So we come and sit. And this is how we immerse ourselves in it. This is it. As we
you mentioned Sangha, and I think out of all the three, Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, I think Sangha is probably the least abstract. And although when I first came here, which was sort of before the official Jikoji was happening, you know, there was Koban Sangha, and people would call it invisible Sangha because there was no list and nobody really knew who all the people were who were in this invisible Sangha. And people would appear from wherever, and oh, I know Koban for years and years, and very often there would be just the person we needed right then, which was kind of remarkable. But as far as relating to individual people, there are people I've actually absolutely adored. You know, people I'm so happy when I see them here. People that I don't really know. I'm sort of feel like I'm getting stranger and stranger because I'm not here often. And some people who I've really actively disliked enormously, although we never had any fight, but I just dislike this person. I'm thinking mostly about one particular person who is not here today, so don't think it's you. He was here quite some time ago, and yet, I used to come here a lot, and he came here fairly often, and so we'd see each other a lot, and we sat together a lot, and so, despite those feelings, which, and I think that they were mutual, those feelings sort of subsided, I think, because there's this incredible connection with everybody in the Sangha that happens when you sat as a sheen together. You've created this connection with the other people that you've sat with, and so something might happen and they mess up, and something might happen and you mess up, but by the end of the week or however long you're here, it's all okay. And okay, we got through another sashin. So there's something about that, and we, you're right when you say we support each other and we help each other. And some people I've sat with for years that I don't know anything about them because we've hardly spoken, and yet, you know, we're connected like this. When we see each other here, we're just so glad. And I also want to apologize. I got here a day late, and I feel like, even though I keep telling myself this is the second day, sometimes I feel like I look around and it seems like the third day, and yet I've noticed by my behavior that I'm still in first day mode, so if I've been jumping a bit, hopefully I'll calm down by tomorrow. Although people say I have a good sushi, and I say, oh, you never really know. So anyway, thank you.
Question about practice. You just mentioned this fine-tuning into shikantasa, like entering a specific mode in the practice. And I'd like to hear more about that, about how to actually do it. I noticed that in my experience that sometimes in my sittings, And especially when I do long sittings and many sittings, that the sitting can turn into many different things and actually can be a space to develop bad habits of the mind. I can just sit there and ruminate or fantasize and think about the future or the past. And on the other hand, I know that I sit to realize emptiness and to awaken, really. Every time I sit to awaken. So, instructions to bridge that intention with what actually happens with my mind beyond the instructions on how to sit physically would be interesting for me.
I like this. First, I would tell you that if you read David Chadwick's book, he talks about, I think it was at Tassajara, and everybody gathered like this, many more people, and on this stage was Suzuki Roshi and Koban and Katagiri Roshi and some other prominent Japanese monks who were, he says, and he's very humorous, he says, these transmitters of Dharma to the West all gathered on the stage and they were all asleep. So sometimes our best intentions is not met. But well, I think it takes some practice, to use that word. In the true sense of the word, it takes practice. And you sit repeatedly. But when you sit, as you say, all the instructions you've had about posture are inherent in the way that your mind works, too. And but there's no the main thing is to be present and observe clearly what's happening. In other words, not be, if you're drowsy, kind of, come back. Pain in your legs can give you a nice sharp edge to being present sometimes. So, when things appear, you let them appear as they will. Don't push it away and don't engage it. Let there be space, the spacious quality, and these things are welcome, so to speak. I don't know. When I sit now, I don't have like a chattering mind to distract me particularly. And we were talking at the beginning of Sesshin, before Sesshin. It feels like sitting like this. It's like coming home. Kind of a sense of relief, I guess. Finally I get to be here. uh, whatever it is that you aspire for, if you reach for it, it's like grabbing at a ball in the swimming pool. It shoots away. So if you sit with the intention of attaining enlightenment, it's to the other end of the pool. It's just gone away. So you might ask yourself, why are you sitting? Why do you keep coming back? But I think it's because of this sinking into, the thing you seek is actually this. So, seriously, no. Saying that tritely, it's this moment is it. Oh boy. Please.
Something to your own fine words. And if Ian said, Ian Song said, it's quite accurate, and what I'll add is mostly academic reference. I don't presume to improve on that. Now, I would start by amplifying something that, in my view, that Leon said. It's very important not to compare some idea that you have, or even some past remembrance of enlightenment, with your situation at the time that you're sitting. You shouldn't say, almost got it now. It feels a little bit, I'm really close. Avoid that. That's the wrong road. Don't do it. Be very careful not to make some comparison of that sort, or grasp after something. Dogen in. So there are a number of things I said I can make references. There are a number of excellent discussions of this. One is in Zazen Shin by Dogen. Another is in the Fukan Zazen, where the main point that you're asking about is really presented as a koan. Opening the hand of thought is an excellent introduction and discussion of what you're asked about. The first classical beginner's mind ends by saying, you shouldn't be wobbling about looking for some special state of mind. You already have it. That's the conclusion of Buddhism. That's the truth. That's not, it's very difficult, but that's the fact. And it reflects also the advice given in Dogen's Guidelines for Studying the Way, in his section 9. And this presents more the Soto approach rather than the Rinzai approach, in which he says it's essential to have a firm faith that you already are enlightened right now as you are. So wish to add a bit more, something for reading that's not as direct as the point is you're getting.
Thank you, Jerry. That was very nice. Thank you. That settles it, I think. Interesting point about faith, though. What Jerry was saying about having a state of mind or something, you know, especially if you have some peak experience in your sitting some time, you can waste years trying to recreate it. So you have to drop that.
Can I say something more?
Please.
Thank you for your advice and responses. I feel, though, that there is this paradoxical nature in intention, because I really feel that an intention or an aspiration really organizes my whole sense of my practice. I cannot just be purposeless or intentionless. On the other hand, I get it that if I sit like wanting to recreate a state or obsess with a desired state, it's like pushing that ball into the swimming pool. So maybe it's a little bit like it was said before, like it's not ultimate self or non-self, it's both things that need to be held in a non-dual way. Maybe this intention to see, to awaken, because otherwise why am I doing the practice? It's to awaken for the benefit of all beings. But on the other hand, I get it that I cannot be attached to that goal when I see it and look for it as a mental, as a conceptual idea.
Somebody once asked Koban if he prayed, and he said, yes, but not while I'm sitting. And whatever brings you to your seat, you leave it when you sit down, regardless of the seemingly altruistic nature of your goal. Doug.
After a few sessions years ago, maybe it was after my first session, I noticed something that was different, and I went to the refrigerator after sushin and opened it like I normally do, like, you know, teenagers do. You know, it's like the first thing you do when you get home, you go to the refrigerator, open it, and grab something to eat. You know, what am I going to eat? And it, for the first time, when I grabbed that refrigerator door and opened it, I realized I had a choice. Before that, I never even thought I had a choice. But being in sesshin, it was like, wow, I don't have to grab what's in there and satisfy an urge, I can think about it for a minute and wait, you know. And so there was a, but that was just one tiny hair of existence, that my existence, that I got a whiff of a bigger aspect to. And so you talked about practice, coming back to it again and again and again and again. And so what do you, why do I sit? But each time you're presented with new, your reality, how you're going to manage, and you get a chance to see how you do. And without, I got it, because you never do. So it's, I don't know, I can see why there's no gain in sitting. So why are we here? But it, something's different when our perspectives are the spaciousness. I think that's what it, one of the big aspects of is helpful for.
Is it beneath bottom line, beneath all of our overt intentions as far as realizing our true self or the betterment of all beings, aren't we really coming here because somehow it makes us feel better? I mean, I've just heard so many reasons for sitting, but in my analysis, it seems beneath all of them is, there's nothing wrong with it, but the intention that this is going to make us feel better.
I think initially, anyways, I mean, that's how I came to sitting, was to find some way out of suffering. Unfortunately, the first couple times I sat, I felt that relief. And so I kept coming back, and I wasn't analyzing why particularly. And I certainly didn't sit down thinking about saving all sentient beings when I did so. I hadn't even heard of that. I didn't know what, wouldn't have known what that meant. And in some ways, I can't say that I really do now. But I think that part of the discussion is, really goes to this, the Diamond Sutra, or if you read Shantideva, stepping onto the Bodhisattva path, you can't even take that first step as long as you have a concept of self and other. So it quickly goes to what, who is there to save? And when you read further, there's all beings are already liberated. There's nothing to liberate, really. So it's more about, I read it in this relative place as offering the opportunity to cut through delusion to all our brothers and sisters.
Thinking about and still feeling a little bit of our last Sesshin, when we talked about silent illumination and the illumination of our original nature, and how the practice kind of grinds down all the sharp edges. And for me, the my what I do and who I am. And the world really has a way of sharpening me. So, and the further I move away from my practice, I'm also quick to strike. So it's interesting when I come up to Sasheen and and when I first say it, the way that I am, the way I meet the cushion, the way I just sit and observe my nature and my mind, and how sharp and vast and rigid I am, and I just kind of just find myself, just this practice just pounds me down in a good way. It just thaws me out and softens me, and every time I'm in this thinking mode, it just, like you said something yesterday that I, or maybe it was you, nothing, there's nothing for it to hang on. Mm-hmm. And and it's not intellectual, and it's not something you can think about, and it's not something you can grasp or, you know, just kind of sit there and just feel. But the whole thing, the one thing that keeps coming down is just the, and I love the spaciousness, because when I'm ground down, when I'm feeling my practice, just my how everything feels so different, and that's beautiful. That feels so good, because I am suffering. It doesn't feel good to feel like I have an edge, or to feel quick to respond to somebody, or to be so affected by things. So this, to me, it is like coming home, you know, before all the noise, before all the experiences, and just settling into this into all of it. So I'm very grateful for it. I'm grateful for you and the Sangha and everyone who rubs me a little bit the wrong way too. So thank you.
I've been wondering about personal benefit. I mean, I've felt lots of benefit from practice, and I think for years I practiced, you know, so I could sleep well and feel healthy, and I wonder if that was kind of a wrong turn, though. What do you think?
I'm glad you're still coming.
Feels good.
Question, why do I do this? And sometimes when I mention to other people about going to a sesshin, they say, why do you do that? And it's just what I do. I don't have more words than that.
Well, it's talked about as an expression of enlightened mind, this activity. So, I started out conveying my sensation of Buddha mind peering out at itself, and I think partly why we sit. Buddha mind arises in that way and we conform to it, something like that. If you hear it, if you feel it.
Oh, well, I don't want to blow myself up too much. Well,
I mean all of us.
Yeah.
So, maybe it's a good time. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.